DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Great night last night for Georgia. DeAndre Baker, the terrific Georgia cornerback, wins the Jim Thorpe Award, going out to the nation's top defensive back. First time ever a Georgia player's won this award. And I got to tell you, it is actually really cool. And this probably wasn't on my radar as much as it should be, but it is actually really cool to think 2 years in a row, Georgia's had defenders win these big awards for top position player at their position in the country. Of course, it's Roquan Smith last year who wins the Buckus Award. That's a pretty nice feather in the cap for Georgia. And to have this year DeAndre Baker bring home the Jim Thorpe Award, I got to tell you, when Baker won the award, and I know a lot of you last week were kind of passing around on social media that stuff about, you know, vote Baker, he's in the lead, vote him. And obviously a lot of fans kind of got behind that charge to the extent that the fans have a say in this. You know, I was, of course, a part of that. But then when you see him win the award, I got to tell you, I had a great sense of pride for Baker when he won this award. It kind of helped me get over the bad taste of Georgia losing to Alabama in the SEC championship. And I think this actually becomes a nice springboard for future success of the program. Let me talk about that a little bit right now. In fact, let me let you hear a little bit from DeAndre Baker, who was decked out last night. Nice. Had the dinner jacket on. I believe he was reporting he was wearing the Christian, is it Louboutin? Is that how you say it? Louboutin? The Christian Louboutin shoes. He was looking sharp and very nice. And Chris Fowler, the ABC ESPN personality, had a chance to talk to Baker, and they discussed Baker bringing home the Jim Thorpe Award. Here's DeAndre Baker with Chris Fowler last night from ESPN.
There have been lots of Georgia players win awards. You are the first Georgia player to be honored as the most outstanding defensive back in the country. What does that mean to you?
Man, it means a lot for me to represent my family in Liberty City, Miami, where I come from. Just a blessing to be here.
So listen, there is a part of me that wants to make this all about DeAndre Baker, my happiness for him and the career that he's had and the NFL career that he might have. But y'all know, to a certain extent, this is always going to come back to recruiting. And I got to tell you, I can't help but think, ooh, defensive back from South Florida, leaves home, comes up to Athens, Georgia, wins the Jim Thorpe Award. Could other defensive backs be thinking about that same thing who currently live in South Florida and who also currently have an opportunity to come be a part of the Georgia program? I have to admit that thought crosses my mind. More on that in a moment. But for now, here's a little more from DeAndre Baker.
You just improved the mood of a lot of Georgia fans back here. Dog's got a huge contingent, so feel happier tonight. Describe the challenge and the attraction for you of shutting down the other team's best wide receiver, because that's an assignment you've had since high school in Miami and throughout Georgia.
You know, coming out of Miami, got a lot of talent, so week in, week out, play good opponents in the SEC, good receivers every week, you know, so I just study film and practice guys like Miko Hartman, you know, Terry Godwin. They helped me out throughout the week, so when it comes game day, it's time to show up.
So this is last night, the ESPN College Football Awards. If you're wondering why there are so many Georgia fans in the building, the awards are actually held in Atlanta at the College Football Hall of Fame. So obviously it's a little easier for some Georgia fans to get there than maybe fans of other programs. But, you know, once again, in a somewhat selfish sense here, boy, when you hear Baker on national television say, the reason why I'm so good is because I've been battling guys like Mecole Hardman and Terry Godwin at practice every single day. What is that advertising worth? I mean, what is that marketing for your program worth? And yes, we will bring it back to Kair Elam and bring it back to Tyreek Stevenson and some names like that, potential defensive back targets for the 2019 class. They were likely tuned in, or at least they'll see these clips shared on social media and they'll say, huh, guy leaves Liberty City, Miami, goes up to Georgia, battles against other five-star prospects like Godwin and Hardman during practice every single day. Now, by the way, Baker, not anywhere near that kind of recruit. It shows you the player development that Georgia's been a part of to see DeAndre Baker enjoy the success that he has. But he credits a lot of that for the work that he's been doing in practice against other really good receivers. I mean, that is a marketing campaign right there that Georgia got for free on the basis of DeAndre Baker winning this Jim Thorpe Award. And then we've talked about this already this week. In fact, I think we made this a large portion of what we discussed off the top of the show yesterday. The fact that Baker, in and around Atlanta, as the build-up of this awards show, has let it be known that he intends to play with Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. We think that's a good thing for Georgia, certainly, and we love Baker's explanation for why he's doing that. One more time with Chris Fowler from last night, and Georgia fans, you all like this. Here's DeAndre Baker.
You know, a lot of guys in your position, he's going to be a very high draft pick, have chosen to sit out their bowl games other than play and risk injury. You're not going to do that. You've announced you're going to play in the Sugar Bowl against Texas. What goes into that reasoning?
You know, I just want to finish out right with the Dogs. You know, my last season, I want to go out with a W and finish out with my brothers.
I mean, come on now. I mean, come on, Georgia fans. How much do you love that? I want to finish out with a W, finish out with my brothers. I want to go out on a high note after the bad taste of what happened against Alabama in the SEC championship game. That is good stuff from DeAndre Baker. I know that every Georgia fan watching or listening right now feels the exact same way. That's a pretty nice statement about the program and a statement about Baker as a young man who does have a chance to be a very good NFL player. I think in all likelihood he will be a first-round pick. I'd be shocked if he's not. And yet he wants to have one more moment, one more time in the spotlight with his brothers there at UGA. That is all good stuff. So think about that for a moment. Obviously, we're heading towards National Signing Day, the early signing period beginning on December 19th. So all of that from DeAndre Baker, the happiness with his career at Georgia, the affection and the connection he feels to UGA. And think about a guy like Kyer Elam right now. Now, Elam's not going to make his choice until February. He's not choosing in December. But we've got some social media proof that some Georgia coaches, Cortez Hankton, Bakari Rambo, have been in home with Kyer Elam this week. In fact, I think we can show you that on the screen here. Yeah, so you see Kyer Elam there with Hankton and Bakari Rambo. By the way, kind of interesting for Rambo, a guy that some people think could be working his way towards a coaching position. Obviously, he's out on the trail for Georgia right now. They're spending some time with Kyer Elam. Obviously, Elam's a priority. Tyreek Stevenson's a priority much the same way from the same general part of the world. What does a guy like Kyer Elam think about what he heard from DeAndre Baker last night? If I could be so wise as to suggest, I would think that this makes defensive back recruiting for Georgia a lot easier in the future. You can say, hey, just like linebackers want to come play at this program because they want to be the next Roquan Smith, well, we got our feelers out there. We got our binoculars out. We're looking to try to find the next DeAndre Baker. Who wants to be that Thorpe Award winner? Who wants to be a first-round draft pick? Who wants to buy his mama a house? Georgia is the place where you can do that with defensive backs, and the Stevensons and the Alams of the world, they are no doubt thinking that the same way the DJ Daniels and people like that are as well. I guess the overall bottom line for me when it comes to this discussion is, for Georgia, as great as this is for Baker individually, it helps the program a lot. It couldn't come at a better time. As you know, in terms of uncommitted players and in terms of holes being filled, for Georgia, defensive back is essentially among the highest priorities. For the most part, I believe that the remaining spots that Georgia has available are going to kind of be a best player available type situation. They're going to just look for elite players and they'll kind of figure out how they fit on the roster once they get them. But that's probably with the exception of defensive back. Georgia needs to replace DeAndre Baker and in this recruiting cycle, and it just needs to fill out its overall depth when it comes to defensive backs. Well, that job gets easier when you can say, hey, we're the program that just produced the Jim Thorpe Award winner. My guess is that's a message that'll travel on the recruiting trail, and making those pitches to come sign up and be a part of the Georgia program for the next 3 or 4 years, my guess is those kinds of sales pitches just got a lot easier. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Hello to you. Thank you for being with us. No matter how you get to us today, live on video at 10 a.m. on the Dog Nation Facebook, the YouTube, the Twitter feed. We're on the radio at noon with our friends in the Classic City on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. And we are available in podcast form wherever you find podcasts, including the worldfamousdognation.com. Or the Apple Podcast Player. Like I said, pretty much anywhere you can find podcasts, you can find our program. We think of the podcast as kind of the on-demand way to listen to our program. We're really glad you have found us today. And we're really appreciative of Marco's Pizza for making it all possible, because Primo is always on the menu when it comes to Marco's Pizza. It's dough made fresh. It's a sauce from the original Giammarco family recipe. It's three signature cheeses blended together. And you can order yours today from marcos.com. I hope you'll check that out. I know for my family, you know, coming into the weekend, especially on Saturday, it's supposed to rain like all day long, I think. And so, you know, for a lot of us, that means it's kind of sitting around, and we'll probably watch Army Navy on TV and things like that. So I know at some point in time, my daughter will look at me and say, Daddy, can we get some Marcos? And yeah, at that point in time, time, that's a pretty good deal because my kids are picky. I'm kind of picky. We never want the same thing. Two medium, two topping pizzas for $6.99 each is a perfect deal for us to kind of get what we want. They can have what they like. I can have what I like, and it's delivered right there to us at a great everyday low price. So say hello, Primo, by checking out Marco's Pizza today or throughout the weekend. It's going to be a great weekend to do that because at least in some cases, cold, rainy weather, you may not want to be getting out of doors. With that said, we'll have Jeff Sintel coming up in a couple of minutes. We will look at everything going on in the world of recruiting with Jeff Sintel here in just a couple of minutes. It's going to be a fun conversation. Let me, though, before we do that, let me talk about something, and ultimately this probably doesn't matter all that much, but I will admit I've been a little bit curious about this storyline here this week. As you're probably aware, Mel Tucker, the now former Georgia defensive coordinator, has officially been named Colorado coach. This is one of those stories that's been kind of out there for a full week, and it seems like there were rumors, there were reports, and the reports turned to confirmations, but now it's actually official. Tucker was in Boulder yesterday. He spoke to the media, and he really expressed his pride for what he thinks is going to happen there at Colorado and how happy he is after a long, you know, list of years climbing his way up the ladder to now be a head coach. Here is Mel Tucker in Boulder, Colorado.
I'm honored and privileged and proud to be here. I've waited for this opportunity for my entire career. I know that we're going to do great, great things here.
I would certainly expect Mel Tucker to have a chance to do great things at Colorado. I'm old enough to remember when Colorado was one of the premier programs in what was back then known as the Big Eight. They're in the Pac-12 now. But this is a program that's had success before, and I think that Tucker's the kind of person that can reignite that success maybe at Colorado. But I've also been kind of interested to see how the media has kind of covered this. You know, one of the things we talk about in sports from time to time, in football especially, is the notion of a coaching tree. A great coach has assistants that also go on to be coaches, and it's almost like the way a family tree kind of splits out over time. A coaching tree kind of does the same thing. And I guess I just sort of assume that given the fact that Tucker had worked with Kirby Smart the last couple of years, that Tucker might count as a part of Kirby Smart's coaching tree. But that's not really the way the media has treated this. Let me show you what Joe Neeson, the writer at Sports Illustrated, said about Tucker getting hired by Colorado. She says, for Colorado, snagging a branch off the Nick Saban coaching tree is no small victory for Colorado. And when I read that from Joe Neeson, I was kind of like, now hold on now. Tucker's been at Georgia for the last 3 years. I don't know that Tucker gets this Colorado job if not for the success the Georgia defense has enjoyed over the course of that time. Yeah, he used to work for Nick Saban, but isn't this credit to Kirby Smart? Isn't this a branch off the Kirby Smart coaching tree? Well, to be fair, when Mel Tucker had a chance to go into his thank yous for, you know, how he got this Colorado job, you know, honesty compels me to admit, he did rank Saban ahead of Kirby Smart. I don't think this matters necessarily, but I guess I am kind of interested in this as a storyline. Here's a little more from Mel Tucker.
We really want to thank some of my former coaches, head coaches that I work for, that help shape who I am today. First and foremost, Coach Nick Saban, who was a mentor to me, been like a father figure for me in the world of football. And he gave me my first opportunity to coach in 1997 at Michigan State, and I'm forever indebted to him. Also, Jim Tressel, who means so much to me. He was a role model for me, and I was on his first staff at Ohio State. We did great things. We won a national championship in our second season there, and we're still great friends to this day, and he taught me so much about not just coaching, but about life. Kirby Smart, I love Kirby. We went to Athens to do something special. There's some unfinished business there, but I think they're well on their way. He gave me an opportunity to work alongside him, and I thank him for that, and I love him for that.
So I don't know what Jim Tressel's got to do with anything, but nonetheless, what Tucker says there at the end is more important than whose coaching tree gets credit for this, that he has great love and affection for Kirby Smart, and he believes that George in the future is going to take care of that unfinished business. And obviously, part of handling that unfinished business of toppling Alabama, getting back the college football playoff, means hiring a good assistant coach to replace Mel Tucker. And when Nick Saban, the Alabama coach, spoke last night at those college football awards that we just brought you some coverage from earlier with with DeAndre Baker. Saban touched on something he's had to do a lot, replace guys like Mel Tucker and Kirby Smart and Jeremy Pruitt. And Saban says it's not an easy thing to do, but it's the dominant philosophy you have in place that makes the new guy likely to have the same success as the old guy. The words that Saban speaks here are obviously relevant for Georgia as it looks for its replacement for Mel Tucker. Here is Nick Saban.
We've been very fortunate to have some outstanding assistant coaches, and they've done a really good job for us. And I think because of the success that we've been able to sustain, obviously they work hard as I worked hard when I was an assistant, so you could have the next opportunity. And we're certainly always happy for them that they have the opportunities to go on and be head coaches. And I think that you love continuity on your staff, but I always look at this as a challenge and an opportunity to add new energy, new enthusiasm, new ideas to your staff. We don't change our program. We don't hire people to come in and be independent contractors and do what they want to do. They sort of have to buy into what we do. But the new ideas, the new energy and enthusiasm that they bring is always very helpful to improving our program. So we're happy for those that get opportunities. We're happy to give opportunities to other people who can make a positive contribution to our program.
And no doubt, I'm sure Kirby Smart feels the same way. And that new energy and enthusiasm he has a chance to invigorate the program with as he replaces Mel Tucker, either with from within or an outside candidate, I'm sure George is going to look to make a great hire. And as Mel Tucker said, take care of that unfinished business there in 2019. That is the situation with Mel Tucker here on Dog Nation Daily. Before we welcome in Jeff Sintel, let me also take a moment to do our Kroger checklist and give you a couple of dates to remember as we head towards the early signing period. First of all, let me start on Monday. That's December 10th at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Dog Nation will have live coverage of Clay Webb as he gets ready to make his college commitment announcement that day. We'll do that for you live at 11 a.m. Eastern Time on Monday. And then the early signing period, of course, begins after that on December 19th. So stick with DogNation.com for plenty more coverage on that. And by the way, the Gym Dogs get ready to begin their season. They have their first look coming up, which is essentially like G-Day for the Gym Dogs. At least that's my understanding. That's going to be December 8th at 4 p.m. There's not a lot of athletic events going on at Georgia right now because of the finals, but the Gym Dogs have an event coming up on December 8th, so make sure you check that out. Also, make sure you check out Kroger and get 3 times the fuel points when you buy select meat and seafood like pork back ribs and Kroger shrimp at your local Atlanta Kroger. You can download the coupon from the app, and you can start saving today. All right, it's great to have you with us here on Dog Nation Daily. We've got some more fun stuff coming up later on from the award show from last night, but for now, let's dive all into the recruiting. Let's get the latest information as we welcome in Jeff Sintel right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Jeff Sintel, I say happy Friday to you, and I'm glad you're with us. One of the things that makes it happier for us is to get some of this recruiting information as we head towards Clay Webb on Monday, and a whole host of decisions beyond that leading towards the early signing period in December, which and then the February signing period. Jeff, you are our source for all of that, so we appreciate you sharing some of your wisdom with us today, and welcome to the program. How are you doing?
Raymond, how are you, man? Hopefully this morning you've followed the example set by Dre Baker and you have a wonderful, resplendent, like, white tuxedo jacket with black lapels and you're coming out real fresh and clean this morning for Dog Nation.
Yeah, I don't think I have got quite as much game as he has. Like, what was the thing he said that you got to be dripping? Is that the phrase? Like, Jeff, I don't believe I'm dripping enough to do that.
Oh, Brandon. That might, you know, drip might be your off-season preparation for Underdog Nation Day. You got to work on more of your drip, man. You get your drip right.
Well, we'll certainly see if we can work on that. Speaking of DeAndre Baker, I made a statement off the top of the program that's fairly, you know, elementary and fairly simple, but I do believe it's accurate. I got my mind on a lot of South Florida DBs right now. Kyrie Lam, who got an in-school visit from some Georgia coaches this week, or at least some Georgia staffers this week. I've also got my mind on Tyreek Stevenson here, too, a guy you and I have talked about a lot. Seeing a guy from their part of the world go to Georgia, win the Thorpe Award, become what I'm assuming is going to be a first-round draft pick, that can't hurt with their recruitment, right?
Oh, yeah. It's kind of like last year with Roquan Smith and the Butkus. You heard some inside linebackers take notice of the fact how well Roquan played at Georgia and how he won some big honors. And I think DeAndre does a couple things. Dre and his drip do a couple of things. Number one, besides looking pretty good in Dapper in the suit, shows that players are developed at Georgia. It shows that you can take a three-star guy and make him into a first-round draft pick through the process at Georgia. You know, remember, I think Dre Baker didn't even play much at all his freshman year until the Tennessee game of his sophomore year at Georgia, and that's when he really, he's told me in the past, that's when he felt like that was when he knew he belonged to Georgia. And you've got guys that will sit there and see there's a young man out of South Florida that can play at Georgia, can lock things down, so to speak, and then go on to be a first-round draft pick. I think a lot of those things, a lot of those stars align very well for Georgia in the future, and obviously that's going to be front and center. That Thorpe Award's going to be in the facility at Buttermere, no doubt about that. And that will be something future defensive backs will all be able to see, because as long as Georgia is, as long as Kirby Smart and the staff is at Georgia, a very heavy emphasis, and it is no unique coincidence that a heavy emphasis will always be placed on defensive back recruiting.
And so just to follow up on that, you told us on Wednesday's edition of Before the Hedges presented by Kroger that, with, at least in the case of Kyrie Lam, who we should point out won't make his decision until February, that Georgia's actually kind of somewhat upended a bit by Mel Tucker going to Colorado. Now, we showed the tweet from Elam a little earlier in the program of Bakari Rambo and Cortez Hankton being down there in South Florida to see him. How do you read between the lines on that in terms of how Georgia's looking to make him feel better with you know, Rambo would certainly seem to be an up-and-comer. He's going to be on someone's coaching staff very, you know, in the very near future. He's obviously a Georgia staffer now, but he's going to be a coach somewhere very soon. A lot of people hope that it is at Georgia. Hankton's one of the newer members of the Georgia coaching staff, but they're kind of pressed into pretty important duty here of making up that ground with Kyrie Lam. What did you make of that photo, and what do you make of how Georgia is scrambling here with Tucker not on the trail for them right now?
Well, you know, obviously, I don't think Rambo's a bad deal to be on the trail at all. Much like last year when Georgia had staff migration or staff promotion with guys like Kevin Shearer and guys like Shane Beamer, that allowed a guy like Jonas Jennings to get on the trail for Georgia, and he definitely handles himself well with his recruiter hat on. And I think Rambo's a guy, he's very relatable. He's still, you know, only 5, 6, 7, 8 years older than a lot of these players, maybe. He played at Georgia. He was an All-American at Georgia. He still holds the co-leader status for interceptions at Georgia. Been coaching there as a graduate now. Got a bright future in the game, but I think with Elam especially, I think Tucker was huge. I think Tucker was maybe would have proven to be the final difference for Georgia with Florida and Texas and other schools. And that's going to be very interesting to see who Georgia replaces as a defensive backs coach. The name I hear a lot, and a name that I hear from recruits a lot, that and their families that they would love to see at Georgia would be Derek Ansley. Derek Ansley has that experience in the NFL now. He's got 1 year with the Raiders. Not a great situation there in Oakland if one would check the one loss record. He does want to perfect his profession as a coach. When I mean move up the ranks, the next rank for him would be maybe a defensive coordinator in the NFL or a defensive coordinator in the SEC. He's done that under the Saban tree. He knows the Alabama defense, but Kirby Smart knows inwards and outwards. He is almost a peerless recruiter on the trail. He was integral in a lot of recruitments for Alabama during his time there. And I think he would do a great job at Georgia if he was the choice there as the defensive coordinator. Maybe even some sort of co-defensive coordinator's position with Glenn Schumann. I think those are things that are definitely going to be thought about in Athens, because Andrew's a guy that's going to be a great fit for somebody somewhere. It's only a matter of time.
So, Jeff, I will tell you what I said yesterday on the program, because I did reference some of your comments about Ansley from Before the Hedges. And what I said is, as a fan, my, I guess, rooting interest has shifted here somewhat. When the Tucker news first came out, I quickly said, you know what, I want to see Glenn Schumann get this job. I think that Georgia's had the kind of success where it ought to be able to promote from within. I love the idea of these young and hungry Georgia coaches getting a chance to move up at Georgia as opposed to feeling like they have to go somewhere else to move up. I like promoting from within in a successful organization. That's what Georgia football is. That was my initial thought, speaking as a fan. But Jeff, you have kind of swayed me here in that defensive back recruiting is so important for Georgia right now, and it's never not going to be important, but it's especially important for the 2019 class. I guess now I am rooting a little more for Ansley to get this job. Now, you know, you just brought up a scenario of co-defensive coordinator. If that was great for both parties, that's probably the best situation of all. But I do admit that I have been kind of swayed on the idea of bringing in some outside blood, some outside influence. As Saban himself said last night, it's new energy when a new coach comes into a program. I guess based on what I think I know about Derek Ansley, it seems like he certainly provides that. So now as a fan, my rooting interest has shifted in the hopes they bring a guy like that into the program and, I don't know, give everybody else a raise or whatever. But bringing in a new guy like that does not seem like too bad of a deal for me at the moment.
Yeah, and, you know, Ansley's a guy. Now listen, you know, Ansley's been at Kentucky. He's been at Alabama. He's been at the Raiders. So he can say highest levels. He can go in those living rooms and he can say that, you know, I've seen what it's like in the NFL. I've competed against guys in the NFL, and I've coached defensive backs in the NFL. That's going to catch some ears when a savvy gentleman and an excellent communicator like Derek Ansley says that. Now, the other thing that I think, you know, there's some recruits I think out there that it would probably be maybe a deal maker even if Derek Ansley was to come to Georgia. And I also think that everybody's on the subject of who's the best recruiter on the Georgia staff. You know, that conversation, if everybody wants to listicle or put their top fives together, you know, obviously Sam Pittman's in there. Obviously Dale McGee's in there. I think Dan Lanning, James Coley, and obviously Glenn Schumann are in there. But if Derek Ansley is on the Georgia staff next season, he's going to recruit, and he's going to do a good job recruiting. So good a job, I think, that he could quickly become one of Georgia's very best recruiters.
All right, so let me talk about something different. I've told you before, I love this social media age in which we live in because we do get some little breadcrumbs about where these Georgia coaches are at. I just showed you an image of, you know, Georgia staffers visiting with Kyrie Lam. We've also seen some evidence this week of Kirby Smart being down in Brunswick. Hopefully he got himself some good Brunswick stew. But nonetheless, he was seen spotting and spent some time with Warren McClendon. Jeff, there has been a lot of conjecture about what might be happening with Georgia and its offensive line recruiting here. The fact that Kirby is going to be there with McClendon in that situation, that to me seems to be a strong piece of evidence that McClendon's still got a strong spot in this Georgia 2019 class. Do you read that the same way?
Yeah, it's kind of a verified visit, but I know it's not a lot of people caught that, but Brunswick also has a very talented 6'3" receiver in the class of 2022, that's also very good as well. And if you know that gentleman named Smart and what he's doing, probably wasn't just there for Mr. McClendon. He's a 2022 wide receiver, but he's already got some interest in state a lot. Everybody's noticed him already. Georgia Tech likes him a whole lot already. That's another name to think about there as well. And, you know, I think the chief benefit for McClendon is he's done it in camp. You can look at film and say that he's blocked guys like Zach Harrison. He's blocked guys like Brian Brzee. He's blocked guys like Nolan Smith. He could also be very adaptable. And it's no stretch to see that Warren McClendon's shelf life in Athens would be much like Cade Mays, where he would play a lot of, you know, adaptable positions, left tackle, left guard, right guard. Make no mistake, Brandon, I think one of the chief things in the 2019 recruiting cycle that not a lot of people are focusing on. There's the stark reality. I only think Georgia has about three or four legit all SEC type tackles in the program. And the thought of how well Isaiah Wilson is playing now at his size and measurables and the way he moves, and then Andrew Thomas, who has looked like a pro from day one at Georgia, it seems like there's the reality that 2019 could be their last season in Athens. And I do think Georgia will go heavy on offensive tackles in this class. It's very important. You've got Darnell Wright expected to make his official visit next weekend. You've got Evan Neal expected to make his official visit this weekend, along with Trey Sanders. So there's a lot of guys in that mix at the tackle spot. Xavier Truss, Trevor Keegan also, Smart and the family also. Smart and Pittman also went in-home with Trevor Keegan and his family. Some conflicting reports out there. I spoke to Trevor Keegan yesterday, and Keegan told me that his decision date is the December 14th date there. It hasn't been moved up or anything else like that. So, as we said before the hedges, there's a lot of big dates to keep in mind.
So let me transition to Trevor Keegan here for a moment while we're on the subject of offensive linemen. You just gave us a couple pretty interesting pieces of information that, indeed, Georgia is expected to host Darnell Wright and is expected to host Evan Neal. That's big information, and it kind of dovetails with some of the stuff that's out there on Trevor Keegan. First of all, we can show a screen grab from Keegan on Twitter where he got a chance to be hosted by Kirby Smart and Sam Pittman. Jeff, when it comes to offensive linemen, normally that's the closer moment when a guy like Pittman and certainly Smart together standing arm in arm with Keegan, that would seem to slam the door in some cases. But I can't ignore the fact there is a lot of online chatter about Michigan trying to get in hard on Keegan here as of late, and maybe even that Keegan's receptive to whatever Michigan's trying to sell him at the moment. How do you, I guess, reconcile this happy photo of Keegan standing there with Pittman? We know that Pittman's the closer. Kirby Smart's there, I guess, in Illinois as well. And yet there's a lot of Michigan, I don't know, steam on social media and message boards and everything else in terms of trying to get in there with the big offensive lineman from Illinois. How do you process all of that?
Well, there's also online chatter, if you're following that. There's online chatter about Jim Harbaugh being linked to names, jobs opening in Green Bay, jobs opening in Cleveland for the head coach as well. And those NFL jobs are very interesting because it's Harbaugh who would potentially be pairing himself up with a franchise-type quarterback. Don't know if he has one of those in Shea Patterson, if Shea Patterson's going to migrate to the NFL or not at Michigan. I think that's very interesting. But, you know, a lot of people, I want to make sure our audience is aware of this. A lot of times when Kirby's out on these visits, it's not like you've got the golden seal or you're approved or we definitely want you. I think what it is Georgia's being very careful and very, very measured with its moves over the next 2 weeks. And they want to know from a lot of their key targets, hey, do we have a shot? Do you want to be in the class? Can you let us know before you make up your mind, especially on the early signing period? Because Georgia has a bevy of names. And the one thing they don't want to do is get caught holding a scholarship at the altar for a player that leaves them scrambling for another lesser talent when everybody else is taken off the board.
So can I just follow up on that for a minute? Because I do think this is a very fascinating part of this, that you've got Keegan, but you've also got what I think are probably viewed as better prospects in Darnell Wright and Evan Neal. I mean, is this one of those situations where, you know, they're going to wait and hear on Neal and Wright before, you know, Georgia makes stronger overtures to Keegan? I know you don't always like those process-oriented questions, but in this case, I do think the process of all this is really fascinating as Georgia tries to fill positions of need, but also just get the best overall players that it can get with the scholarships that it has available.
Yeah, you see a lot of things, and you have to hear, you have to kind of filter through a lot of things as well, Brandon. Like, you know, with Keegan, he's a guy that I think, even though he's rated as the nation's number 14 tackle or somewhere like that on the composite, I think he's probably more likely to play away. He's got an aggressive play right away. He's got an aggressive nature. In some ways, it's not totally full-grown Cade Mays, but he's definitely in that sort of a discipline of playing very aggressive, hard-nosed football. With guys like Neal, the scouting thought on there, his body has changed so much. He was 370, 380. He dropped down to 350. A lot of folks wonder whether or not he's a tackle or he's a guard. Nolan Smith, who knows a thing or two about getting by and dipping his shoulder, coming flying in off the edge, and he's told me a lot of times that he thinks Evan Neal will be a tackle in college. There's some thought whether Evan could be a guard. And with Darnell Wright, I think the scouting onus on him is this is a redshirt and growth type player. Maybe not a guy, even though he has the 5-star rating. He's a kind of a redshirt. See where he is in 1 to 2 years, and that might mesh out pretty well with, you know, being ready to play after, you know, guys like Wilson and guys like Mays and guys like Thomas are almost on their way to Sundays instead of Saturdays. The other thing to think about there is I think there's really a true kind of tiered thing there, especially with Neal and especially with Wright. You hear the name Alabama associated a lot with both of those. I think Neal is probably going to come down to a Florida State, more likely a Miami or Alabama type thing. And I think if Neal is going to decide during the early signing period, I've got to remember, Neal was also a one-time commitment to Alabama as well. If he chooses Alabama, I think that helps Georgia and maybe makes the Crimson Tide have a stellar offensive line class coming together with guys like Amari Kite Pierce Quick, and then if they were to add Evan Neal, that would be just be tremendous. Tremendous haul for the Crimson Tide.
Yeah, which is certainly something I don't like thinking about. Good news for them. Let me try to bounce through a couple other issues real quickly before we get ready to let you go here. I thought your piece involving Jaden Hazelwood, the latest piece, was very fascinating. And for me, Jeff, it was a lot more comforting, obviously, than the piece from Hazelwood going back to the weekend where, you know, to be frank, I thought that Hazelwood was given to emotion in what he was saying there. Obviously, the adults, the advisors closer to him, are like in all recruitments, are likely to be more level-headed. I thought the level-headed assessment of Hazelwood's situation, I think a lot of Georgia fans ought to take a lot of stock in that, and it's one of the reasons why, even though this recruitment seems to be all over the place and excessively dramatic in the eyes of some fans, I still feel like this plane's going to get landed in Athens when it's all said and done, and the piece that you wrote recently at DogNation.com only makes me feel more that way. What did you make of the close confidant to Hazelwood shedding some light on that recruitment?
Well, number one, as I said in that piece, I'm very aware of pacing out the Hazelwood story because he's got another month to go almost, and you know, I'm the type of reporter that every time I see Jaden Hazelwood, I don't go, he's the number one receiver recruit in the country. I absolutely have to get a story about how he's feeling every time. I don't always feel that way. Sometimes I just go watch him play because I know that I'm going to be comparing him to a lot of receivers down the line is kind of the standard, so I will know, you know, what actually excellence is, and he's just going to be a measuring stick for every receiver that I will see going forward. You know, I think it balances things out a lot, and that's what I try to do with all of our coverage, no matter if it says Dog Nation on the website. But as I was writing that, I kind of picture, you know, sometimes an early writing tip is they tell you to picture your audience, what their reaction might be, and try to feed the audience. And I couldn't help but think my man B.A. was probably fist-pumping or saying,
yeah,
see, that's exactly what I'm thinking. I probably created about one or two of those in B.A. at least right there when you had
sure.
that read.
For sure. No doubt about that.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
So I think that's a way, and, you know, again, it's trying to reinforce a lot of the reporting. I think when, you know, I included that perception about Oklahoma as well. I gave the video of the Rose Bowl memory and stuff like that. That's really what I feel that all these schools are competing against. I thought maybe the two most important things, and I'm sorry, maybe I need to be a better storyteller or draw things out for people better, but, you know, there's those that, even on our beloved Dog Nation forum, that sit there and they go yawn and they don't understand maybe what that story was about. The two things that I thought that story was about was, one, a very close friend and an inner circle gentleman said that aside from making it to the league and providing for his family, the single most important thing he thinks Jaden Hazelwood wants to do is to win a national championship.
Yeah.
That's not putting the ball in the air. That's not stats. That's not 10 targets a game. He realizes, that perception realizes, that Jaden Hazelwood will be quite dreary if he wins the Biletnikoff Award and never plays in a meaningful game with a lot on the line in his college career. And then the other thing I thought, and I kind of do group you in there, my friend, to those amateur CSI recruiters who would probably check student directories or say, okay, I know what Oklahoma's doing, I know what Georgia's doing, I know what, that takes all the suspense and the air out of the balloon. I thought it was very interesting how Team Hazelwood has came up with the decision that they're not going to do a thing until he puts his hat on January the 5th.
Yeah,
And then they will go through the, you know, signing whatever they need to sign or whatever they feel like comfortable signing. To me, as a guy that's, you know, one of the guys that has to follow Hazelwood, being a former Georgia commit, being where he is in the state of Georgia, I thought those were two very interesting pieces to the puzzle here.
All right, Jeff, let's try to do two issues really fast before we let you go. There was a photo that popped up on social media last night, and I have to admit I found it to be very poignant. It was a 24/7 sports writer who showed Noah Cain and Trey Sanders receiving, I guess, what amounts to co-MVP awards from IMG Academy. And when you look at these two guys standing side by side, I think it's a very interesting scenario. As Shannon Baker, one of our Facebook viewers, put on our comment section a moment ago, you got Noah Cain tweeting all the the time about his love for Georgia. But I also picture our audience when a couple of minutes ago you said, hey, you know, Trey Sanders taking a visit to Georgia. I believe it's this weekend, you said. And that stops people in their tracks because there are a lot of people who like the idea of Kane but would love the idea of Trey Sanders. How real is this? How weird is it for you that Georgia may be shopping among teammates right now at the running back position? I guess if Sanders is indeed in Georgia, that means he's not at Florida, which is kind of an interesting thing there too, I guess. I mean, what do you make of this situation right now? Is it worth getting your hopes up for Trey Sanders right now, or does Georgia just need to be happy with what it has with Noah Kane?
Well, good stuff here, and I think it's a couple things. Number one, it's Georgia's always going to be upgrading. I know you're so kind to have me on your program 2 days a week, but I think if Roquan Smith or Herschel Walker wanted to take it from 10:15 a.m. slot, you better believe Jeff's going to have to call into the – Jeff's going to get a call at 10:45 on Friday instead of 10:15 on Friday. So Georgia's always seeking to upgrade here and upgrade every spot. And here's why I think it gets interesting. Number one, I've kind of always felt that Sanders was going to end up at either Georgia or Alabama. And I've also, you know, it's because it's just the running back pedigree, the line, he gets all that. He was very comfy and cozy at G-Day with a lot of other folks. Here's where I think things got off track with Georgia, is when Georgia took John Emery, that kind of just started dating someone else, to use a high school metaphor. Sanders realized that a potential suitor was now going steady with somebody, and there's no need to start going to the movies with somebody else. He started looking elsewhere. Now, when John Emery comes off the board, and then now there's the moments here that are showing up where, Elijah Holyfield, is he likely to go pro? It continues to be what we hear. What about Brian Kerrion? Then all of a sudden, Trey Sanders sees that Georgia is not betrothed to anybody yet in the 2019 class, especially not an elite back. And that gets Georgia more interesting. And also, love how recruiting is for all you guys. Mike Locksley, the talented offensive coordinator for the Crimson Tide, was the lead recruiter on both Evan Neal and Trey Sanders. Of course, Locksley's now on his way to Maryland, and I think that also opens up a lot of things. One more straw, Brandon. Alabama, I don't know if you noticed or not, but they kind of win games right now more throwing the ball around to Tua Tagovailoa and his five-star magic show of five-star receivers. So Alabama's probably not seen as the place to run the rock and to enhance your stock for the NFL as it used to be. I'm sure everybody saw what Derrick Henry did last night. But lots of things there that are working in the always fluid recruiting cycles for all these young men.
Well, let's go then. That is very, very interesting stuff, Jeff. That's good, good, good information. All right, very quickly, because this is obviously, you know, it's that time of year, but we've kept you long, and I want to be respectful of your time. Quick preview, if you don't mind, of Clay Webb on Monday. We'll have Dog Nation coverage of that live, either good news or bad news. We're going to bring it to you one way or another. But you got a quick preview of just kind of your thought process, what you imagine Webb's thought process is, you know, just kind of where all this goes and in terms of how this plays out on Monday?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm interested in this because as a guy that follows recruiting a lot, you expect from a lot of these decisions and processes that you'll get some of the same thing, like a Chick-fil-A drive-through, so to speak. You know, it's going to be a Chick-fil-A in McDonough versus a Chick-fil-A in Woodstock versus a Chick-fil-A in Cumming. Well, you know, Clay Webb's always been so different. Different about he doesn't want schools to pay for his official visits when he knows he's not going to go there. He would feel indebted to them. He doesn't want to take the trip to Southern Cal or Texas or anywhere else like that because he knows he's not going to go there. So why go through all the meetings and the awkwardness of somebody trying to do something? You know, I think he's going to call. I think he's going to call his schools shortly before he makes the decision, maybe a day or two. And Clay Webb has recently told me that was going to be very excruciating for him to have to do that. I think I don't even see him doing something with the hats. I can see him just, you know, standing up and just saying, "Hey, I'm going to go here," and that's it. Not a lot of grandeur, not a lot of pomp and circumstance. I think I've shared this on some of our programs before. I do think that the Georgia Bulldogs are clearly in the thick of things. And And I think I said them before the Hedges the other day. I kind of feel like a country doctor in this one that's people come into his waiting room and the patients all keep saying they've got the same symptoms. And after a while, you have some level of confidence about where they're going to end up. And I've heard these same things that Clay Webb has been telling me for a while. And they usually end up with a young man going to go play for Sam Pittman.
Okay, so last thing, very, very quick. I mean, what comes to my mind here is a guy like, say, A.J. Brown, who just finished off a great career at Ole Miss as a wide receiver, was from Starkville, Mississippi, and sat there in that gym that day or wherever it was at his school and chose the in-state rival, leaving Starkville to go to Oxford and play for Ole Miss. There are not a lot of people, Jeff, who can tell a crowd what it does not want to hear. Ultimately, when it's all said and done, do you think Clay Webb is the kind of young man, whether it's Clemson or Georgia, either way, can Clay Webb sit in Oxford, Alabama, some way, somehow, speak into a microphone and say, I'm leaving the state to go play college football? It's one thing to really like Sam Pittman better than everybody else. It's one thing to be trending to Georgia. It's another thing to stand at Oxford High School in Oxford, Alabama and say, peace out, I'm gone. I mean, is he the kind of guy that can do that?
Yeah, he can do that because it's funny, Brandon, you say that. And I remember tracking Clay Webb sophomore year. I think I was there to talk to KJ Britt. And one time Britt was very likely to go to Georgia, even one of those silence type guys. And he ended up at Auburn. And I remember the coaching staff telling me about Clay Webb then that they're like, by the time he gets to be a senior, he might be the first player we've ever had here. If he got out of line, I don't know if we have enough coaches to reel him back in terms of his sheer brute strength and physicality. I mean, I think the young man, as we did this before, he literally set the squat record in Oxford, and it's a certain number because they ran out of plates to put on squat rack. Clay Webb's about 6'4", about 290. When all this is said and done, he wants to go into law enforcement. He wants to be a criminal justice major. He wants to be in the FBI, maybe like a dog bounty hunter type guy long term. I don't think anybody is going to look Clay Webb in the eye and get any sort of ornery with him. And it also helps in the state of Alabama, where most people assume it's going to be Alabama or Auburn and not one or the other. That's another thing to think about as well. But Clay's the type of guy that I don't think anybody really wants to cross him at all when they have a difference of opinion.
Jeff, that is great stuff. Man, I really appreciate your time today. I know we have kept you for a long time, but you've certainly given us some good stuff to chew on. It's going to be a fun build-up towards December 19th, and it continues on Monday with the Clay Webb announcement. We appreciate you shedding some light onto all that with us. We hope you have a great weekend, and we'll look forward to speaking to you soon right here on Dog Nation Daily.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, y'all, really appreciate you indulging me with the long interview with Jeff. There's just so much to get into. And honestly, I think it's fascinating. I love the process of all of this. I love the way that Georgia is working to get the very best roster in place that it can. And, you know, listen, I don't know that I'm cut out for what Kirby Smart's required to do. This thing where you say, we could have this guy, but we might could get this guy. Let's see if we can roll the dice and actually improve our position with the better overall player. And I don't want to mention names here. I'm just talking about just generically speaking across the board. You know, Kirby takes some risks. He's willing to leave some spots open in the hope that they can eventually be filled with the best overall players available. And I don't know if you've noticed, but it takes every bit of that to knock off that team that Georgia's trying to knock off right now. But Georgia is doing more in the build-up towards signing day than any threat to Alabama ever has. The Floridas, the LSUs, the Auburns, these different programs in the SEC that have popped up from time to time as a potential threat to Alabama, no one has built the roster that Georgia has built. Now, it hasn't broken through yet in terms of actually winning that head-to-head game against Alabama. We're all very well aware of that. But I think the future here is very bright, and I think this lead-up to the 2019 signing class is another example of that. But for now, though, let's do our SEC through, and let's focus in on a few things around the SEC. By the way, we do have some big breaking news that we'll get to in just a moment. But for now, College Football Awards do go down last night, and I guess the big takeaway is that it seems like our Heisman Trophy decision tomorrow night is going to actually be pretty interesting. You've got Kyler Murray, who wins the AP Player of the Year. That came out earlier in the week. But you've got Tua Tagovailoa last night, who wins the Maxwell Award and the Walter Camp Award. And all of these, to a certain extent, are thought to be precursors to the Heisman Trophy. So we may actually have a pretty good bit of drama for the Saturday Night Heisman Trophy deal. And I wish I wasn't this way, but there's a spiteful part of me that would take a little bit of happiness. I don't want to say pride, because pride's reserved for winning games. But I'd be a little bit happy to know that Georgia knocked Tua Tagovailoa out of the Heisman Trophy, because, listen, I was watching some of this game last night. Now, I still don't like watching the SEC Championship, but I was watching the first half of that game. Tua Tagovailoa got hurt because Georgia was hitting him. So, you know, this wasn't Tua leaving with an injury. This was Tua getting knocked out of the game. And I don't mean that in any kind of, like, dirty, you know, cheap shot way. I just mean Georgia was very physical with the quarterback, and Tagovailoa couldn't withstand that. And if he loses the Heisman Trophy, he'll have Georgia to thank for the reason why. As far as the other awards go, we talked about DeAndre Baker winning the Thorpe Award. That's good stuff there. LSU's Devin White does win the Butkus Award, so that stays in the SEC again for another season. Jerry Jeudy from Alabama wins the Biletnikoff Award as the top wide receiver. I always thought that was the most underrated part of the Alabama roster, were those wide receivers. Braden Mann wins the Ray Guy Award as best punter. The Bednarik Award goes to Josh Allen as the Defensive Player of the Year. I don't understand why Allen's gotten so much more love than Quentin Williams, but nonetheless, that is the deal there. Also released yesterday, as we told you about, the all-SEC freshman team was released. There are five Georgia guys on this list. It was kind of nice to see Justin Fields be a part of that. And, you know, who else from Georgia made this list? Isaiah Wilson as a redshirt freshman. Cade Mays. I think it's cool that Mays got honored, just given the fact that Mays was into the season kind of being hurt. Jordan Davis is on there. That's well worth it for him. And that's a great job for the SEC honoring him for that. And then Jake Kamarna, the freshman punter, who, you know, boomed another one on Saturday, 60-yard punt against Alabama. He's going to be more consistent next year. But I still think Kamarna could have a bright future there at Georgia. A couple other stories to get to. You know, we talked about Kendall Briles being floated as a potential replacement for Tyson Helton as Tennessee offensive coordinator. There's been a little bit of pushback for this. Obviously, Tennessee has to focus its attentions on Briles and others because Hugh Freeze has been, that's official, right? Hugh Freeze is officially the Liberty coach. So Liberty, the Christian school, showing some Christian forgiveness for Hugh Freeze's past behavior. He'll get a chance to be head coach there. And that means that a guy like Kendall Briles, who's the current Houston offensive coordinator, now being floated here at Tennessee. The controversy, though, is that Briles is the son of Art Briles. You know about the issues there at Baylor. I frankly, if there's going to be a big uprising against this, I don't think that Jeremy Pruitt's got the political capital to hire a guy that a lot of boosters find distasteful. Now, you can debate amongst yourself if Kendall Briles should be unhirable, but if he is, I don't believe that Jeremy Pruitt's got the power to hire him right now. They may have to go somewhere else and look for a different coach. Speaking of coaches, one more piece of news to get to. It is now official that Georgia Tech, after all those rumors involving Ken Wisenhunt, either ended up being one of two things. Wisenhunt turning down the job. I seriously doubt that's the case. I sort of wonder if this whole thing wasn't a smokescreen all along to get the movement among the coach that Georgia Tech might have really wanted. And apparently it has hired the guy that it wanted all along. Jeff Collins is now Georgia Tech coach. Collins, most recently the Temple head coach. He was Florida defensive coordinator for a couple of years under Jim McElwain. Now, this is a much better situation than I believe that Wisenhunt would have been. Wisenhunt, no college experience, not a recruiter. Collins has been a defensive coordinator in the SEC, so he understands the South. He's been a head coach. I don't know that Georgia fans should be quaking their boots about this, because frankly, none of the recruiting classes that Collins was a part of at Florida were ever very good. But nonetheless, he does have some experience for Georgia Tech. This is a much better hire than Ken Wisenhunt would have been, and it's probably an upgrade over where Paul Johnson had the program in 2018. So Tech does get its man here, and honestly, this will probably end up being inconsequential news, at least for most of the next 10 years or so. But as of now, Tech has made a better hire than it could have made, so I guess that's something, and we'll make that your SEC through. Now, here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco Speeds, let me turn my attention back to Georgia for a moment, and I guess in a lot of ways, this will close the book on the, was Georgia one of the four best teams in the country? Because last night, Nick Saban did get asked about this. And ultimately, you know, Saban's opinion here doesn't really matter. Saban's going to say and do whatever he needs to say to benefit him in that moment. He is very much like a politician. You're about to hear him grilled like a politician. And really, that's the reason why I play this, is because, you know, I don't think Saban's defense of Georgia was all that full-throated, you know, full-hearted. I don't believe that Saban was really into this, but he had said that Georgia was one of the four best teams in the country and didn't want to play him again in the college football playoff. So he was asked last night, wait a second, how come you said Georgia was one of the four best teams and then you voted number five in your coaches poll, which is made public at the end of the season? And Saban kind of hemmed and hawed with his answer. Here is the Alabama coach.
Well, I do think they're one of the top four teams in the country, but I don't think they were going to get in a playoff with two losses. I voted the teams that I thought had the best chance to get in. But I do think after playing Georgia, they were one of the best four teams in the country. What this basically indicates is the SEC championship game was a playoff game. So, you know, the 1-4 team in the country played, and it was a heck of a game, and they played a great game, and they have a great team, and I think they're one of the best four teams in the country. And that's no disrespect to any of the people that are here, but I didn't think they had a chance to get in with two losses.
So ultimately, that's not how the coaches' poll is supposed to work. Your prediction of what the playoff field is supposed to be, you're supposed to vote what you think are the best teams. Now, obviously, it's understandable that Saban would not have wanted to give bulletin board material to Oklahoma, the team he's about to play, or Clemson or Notre Dame, one of the two teams he could play in a championship game. So it's certainly practical to not vote Georgia number four, because that's going to become a major headline. Given the fact that you are a coaches poll voter, that does become public at the end of the season for the final vote. But credit to some reporter, and I don't know which one this is, he asked the next obvious question to Nick Saban. So wait a second, are you saying then that if Georgia is one of the four best teams in the country and it's not in the playoff, that the playoff is somehow not made up of the four best teams in the country? That's actually a pretty good question for Saban, and Saban gave at least his version of an answer. One more from Nick.
So just to follow up, you're saying that playoff teams aren't necessarily the four best teams?
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that I'm saying what I said, and I'm not changing what I said. When we played Georgia, I thought they were one of the best four teams in the country. That doesn't mean that they're any better than the teams that are here, and I voted for the four teams that are here. Is that correct?
So listen, I mean, ultimately... I guess ultimately the only thing I like about this is the fact that Saban's going to ask a tough question and kind of forced to squirm a little bit. I like seeing him grilled like a politician during a press conference. I kind of like that. I mean, frankly, Saban's trying to thread a needle here that can't be thread. I think Georgia's one of the four best teams in the country, but I think it's right that these four teams in the college football playoff. Ultimately, that does not make a lot of sense. And so from that standpoint, I guess I kind of like seeing Saban grilled on that. But as many of you have said, the real issue moving forward for Georgia in 2019 is to leave no doubt. You're going to hear me say that a lot. Leave no doubt. I love what Mel Tucker called it earlier in our program. It's unfinished business. Georgia shouldn't need Nick Saban to vouch for them next season, because ultimately Saban's not going to be a very good ally for you. Georgia shouldn't need Marcus Spears and Kirk Herbstreit and Jesse Palmer, a lot of these media members who've spoken up on Georgia's behalf. Georgia needs to make its own case by actually knocking off that guy, Nick Saban. They need to do that next year. And I would imagine that privately, that's what's going to fuel this team a lot. I think it's going to be partial fuel getting ready for the Sugar Bowl. And I think it's going to really be set in motion for 2019. The next year, there will be no need for Nick Saban to call Georgia one of the four best. Its performance on the field will prove that beyond any shadow of a doubt. Alrighty then, let's get ready to wrap up our program and wrap up the week. Don't forget, on Monday, in addition to Dog Nation Daily, we'll also have live coverage of the five-star offensive lineman Clay Webb's decision, whatever it is, good news or bad news. We will bring it to you right here on the Dog Nation video channels. I'll also tell you, you know, around here we don't like the Florida Gators very much. We're very happy, but the fact we can now say it's been 769 days since those lousy, stinking Gators have had anything to brag about when it comes to Georgia. That's how long it's been since Florida has beaten UGA. We'll do our Gator Hater Updater every single day here on Dog Nation Daily. Also, a couple notes here to wrap up. I hope that you are kind of excited about Army-Navy tomorrow. Remember, this is our last non-bowl game of the season, I guess. You know, FCA playoffs, too, although I don't necessarily care a ton about that. But Army-Navy tomorrow is not so bad. I'm looking forward to checking that one out. Really good-looking Army uniforms. I'm excited about seeing that. Also, it's a pretty good weekend for SEC basketball, although it does not involve UGA. Nonetheless, we'll see you Monday right here on Dog Nation Daily.